Well, I think the role of the artist has never changed. You know, I think our role has always been to kind of, you know, document the events that occur, you know, see the world. We try to see the world through colorblind, through colorless glasses. You know, we try to give an impression of how things are evolving, not only in our community, but in other communities around the world. You know, and staying true to that, what happens with that is that the environment itself dictates what the art will be. You know, if you are really about serving the public, you know, it won't be the other way around, where you try to create a sound or create an idea and try to get people to jump on board with that. I don't believe in that approach. For me, I believe in like really trying to keep my fingers on the pulse of what's going on, and allow that to kind of guide me and inspire me and influence me in any artistic direction that I'm moving in the future.
I'm with you entirely. So along those lines, how do you use music to underscore these three words, I can't breathe?
Well, we try to create a discussion. We try to create a healthy discussion. With the latest album, you know, Breathless, we've tried to talk about all of these issues, the injustices in our communities. You know, we all know what's going on. We all see the middle class has been dwindling. You know, the haves have more, the have-nots have less. And people at the top of the economic stratosphere are very comfortable with that. And to me, it flies directly in the face of some of the things that they espouse in terms of their Christian or religious beliefs, no matter what type of religion that you're in or believe in. You know, so we try to call attention to those things. You know, in terms of race, the same thing occurs. And if you notice, a lot of times when we have economic struggles in our country, in our society, the racial thing becomes a bigger issue as well. You know, I mean, I kind of knew that when Obama was elected that we would see a new form of racism, but I didn't know to what degree. And you couple that with the fact that a lot of people around the country are struggling, you know, in terms of just trying to make it day to day, you know, it creates for a volatile situation. And one of the things we try to do with the music is constantly talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, when we deal with soldiers is all about the social workers that are out there trying to do work for people and do things for others, not really worry about themselves, but being selfless. And when you talk about confident selflessness, you know, the whole idea behind that particular tune is that, you know, and, you know, I've been a Buddhist for about 8 years. And one of the things in Buddhism is to be confident in what it is that you're striving for. Be confident in how you're approaching it, how you are studying the issues. Be confident in your attack plan, but also be selfless in how you try to help others and try to uplift other people.
I believe you. I'm talking with Terrence Blanchard. You told me about a change to Buddhism 8 years ago. What led you to that, and what philosophies informed you to that?
Well, I was on the road with Herbie Hancock, you know, and he's been a Buddhist for a number of years. And, you know, we were chanting before every show with Herbie, and I really got into the whole type of, first of all, the communal nature of it. Second of all, the solitary nature of it when I would chant in the morning by myself. And I think, you know, what really drew me to Buddhism is how it kind of set the tone for the day for me. You know, it's different for everybody else. I'll talk to this one guy who was a devout Christian, and he would get up and he would pray every morning. He would have the same type of sensation. So for me, chanting in the morning kind of sets the tone for the day, you know, and through that, it's kind of, you know, opened my eyes to a lot of things about in terms of the power of music, some of the things we were just talking about, the power of art, you know, how art can help influence people, how art can help change hearts and minds, you know. So all of those things coupled together, you know, have really had a strong impact on not on my life as a person, but also my life as an artist.
Oh, I can feel it. You know, there's just a, there's a spark, there's this, but there's this calmness, and there's just this grounded nature that seems to be in your music today. It also, I was just recently in New York, and I attended the Jazz Connect conference. One of your friends was on a panel, well, quite a few of your friends, but one of them very specifically was Gary Bartz. He was on this panel on jazz and film, and the moderator was Ashley Kahn. And I'm going to, spin it around in this way. What is the role of the musician in film for today's culture? What's the role of the musician in film?
Well, it depends on the film, obviously, because sometimes the music, the roles will change. But in general, you know, the music is there to help tell a story. You know, and in a general sense, the music shouldn't even be noticed. You know, it should just be there to kind of enhance. It's that intangible thing. It's the thing that gives us an indication of what's going on when there are no words being spoken or when no words can be spoken. You know, and then in other instances, you know, the music can be a character. You know, like when we did When the Levees Broke, and that's a documentary, but the music itself became another character in the film. You know, and Spike, you know, he generally loves to do that. When we did, when we did Miracle at St. Anna, and most of the point when we did Inside Man.
Yeah.
You know, the music in that film basically was a separate character. You know, it was a character that elicited emotions of danger, suspense. So it changes from film to film, obviously, but in general, in a general sense, my main job is to help the director to tell a story in the most concise manner possible.
You've become very, very good at it. In a general question, how can jazz be best represented in film? What's the best way, in your mind, to present jazz in film?
Well, it takes the right kind of composer, first of all, because I think, you know, What some people in the film industry have a problem with is that when we talk about jazz and film, they've heard John Coltrane records all over the place, and they think that you're trying to have improvised solos throughout every scene. And the thing that I always try to tell them, no, that's not the case. I mean, classical music is improvised as well on certain elements of it, in certain periods of it, you know, but it's a language, and that language can be utilized, you know, to great effect. The same thing can happen with jazz. Jazz is a language. There's a rhythm. There's a sound. There's a harmonic nature to it. You know, there's a rhythmic nature, melodic nature to it. You know, all of those things can be used to great effect, you know, to create something that's uniquely American, by the way, and also creatively and artistically very unique.
Very unique. Yeah. All the way. The film clip that I forget who chose it, but the film clip that really illustrates a lot of that conversation is the film clip from Mo Better Blues when Tane is soloing during the fight scene. My God.
Yeah.
Holy cow. You're just not, you know, they played that, and the whole auditorium at St. Peter's Church was, nobody wanted to breathe.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, there are some instances. I remember there was a film that I did where it was more along the electric, rock and roll jazz kind of fusion kind of vein. But what I had to do was to score a robbery scene. Ooh. In a film called Dark Blue. And basically what I did was I allowed the guys to just play. I let them play, and then the scene would cut back and forth between the robbery, and then it would cut to this other police officer being interrogated for a wrongful shooting. And I cut the music in and out between those scenes, and it worked to great effect.
Wow.
So one of the things that happens, you know, when you have guys that are playing with that raw energy that can happen with jazz musicians is that you cannot put that down on paper, you know, that energy can be extremely powerful. And to use that, you know, to cut right into that energy is something that you cannot write for an orchestra. It just won't happen in the same way.
Oh, I'm having a great time talking with you, Terrence Blanchard. Truly am. We need to talk about your appearance at Cliff Bell's in Detroit in just a moment. But before we get to that, you know, I remember when you were artist in residence at the Detroit Jazz Festival. What a party we had. What a great time we had. And I want to thank you for the hard work that you've given to the DSO, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, for jazz. In your association with the Detroit area, what's your impression of our jazz community?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like a home away from home for me, you know, and I'm still with the DSO.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I've always loved about it is that it reminds me of New Orleans and the rich history that it has with this music. You know, the legacy of all of these musicians that have come from Detroit is well known, you know, and you see it today playing out with some of the younger artists. I mean, I remember I went to, you know, one of the high schools there, and I was playing with one of the groups, man, and I thought the drummer was one of the teachers, because he was so mature and so talented. His name is Kayvon. And when I looked back, I looked at this little 17-year-old kid playing the drums going, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but that's what happens in Detroit. You know? And you can see it with the shows that we put on at the DSO. People come out, and they really enjoy the music. You know, we did a show a couple of months ago with Wayne Shorter, and I'll never forget it. Wayne Shorter started playing quotes from some early Miles Davis recordings, and the crowd went crazy. That wouldn't happen many other places. You know what I mean? Because you have an educated audience there in Detroit. And I was standing in the back of the auditorium just with my mouth wide open going, wow, this is amazing. You know. And then he also started playing some quotes from Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and people caught that as well and were screaming. So, you know, that's what makes Detroit, to me, extremely special. And I've been very thankful to the supporters there for coming out and really supporting all of the concerts, because our motto has been rebuilding Detroit one concert at a time. And we've been seeing that because the crowds have been getting larger and larger, and there's just been more support for the entire series.
Great. And I'm so glad that you've hooked up with Cliff Bell's for the show this weekend. Are you taking the whole collective, the whole group, coming with you?
Yeah, I'm excited about playing Cliff Bell's, man. Cliff Bell's that's been my spot to hang out for a number of years. I love going there because I love hearing great musicians there. You know, great Detroit musicians playing there. You know, there's always an educated audience there as well. And yeah, we're bringing the entire group to Cliff Bell's, and I can't say anything more about it, man. I'm just excited about playing there. It should be a lot of fun.
Now, I know that you'll play selections from the new CD and tell us some stories that go with that. Any other surprises that you have for us this coming Sunday?
Well, probably the biggest surprise is that I may not talk much. You know, normally with a lot of my shows, I do a lot of, you know, talking in between songs. But with this band, you know, we've just been getting to the music, so that may be one thing that may shock people who used to come to see me play.
That's okay. That's all right. You know,
good.
Change is good. Change is different.
Good.
And before I let you go, give me an update on NOLA. What's happening in the Crescent City? How's your life there?
Well, you know, New Orleans, life here for me has been great. I mean, this is my hometown. I've loved it for a number of years. I moved back here in 1995, and I've been enjoying it immensely. But, you know, we have our struggles like most cities around the country. You know, even coming off of the horrible tragedy of Hurricane Katrina, there are a lot of people who are still trying to rebuild their lives here. I mean, there's been a lot of great things that have happened. Don't get me wrong. One of the things that I think is very interesting about New Orleans right now is that you know, there's been an influence of young, brilliant minds to the city. You know, I don't know if you guys have been following it, but, you know, there's been the whole debate about some of the monuments around here that people have felt were a little, were not totally inclusive of all of the cultures in the city. So there's been a large effort to move those, and that's something that I thought I would never see anymore. But because of the young, brilliant, and open minds that we have here, things are changing slowly.
Good. Good. We need young people to you know, kick us. And 'cause we were young once, we were them once, you know, and we were hot, and we changed the world. And so, you know, we got to keep on changing, you know?
Well, here's the thing that I say to that. You know, one of the things that I love about this life, you know, is you can never become too comfortable. You know, my trumpet teacher, Bill Fielder, told me years ago, he says, you're never standing still, you know, because while you think you're standing still, the world is moving forward. So you're actually falling behind. And one of the things that I love about being here in New Orleans is that there are a lot of young people, and even my kids, they check me on some of my stuff, you know, and I thought I was the most liberal person on the planet. But sometimes I may say something that's totally out of pocket. My kids are like, hey, Dad, you may want to rethink that. And when they're right, I have to sit down and really take a great look at what it is that they're talking about. And for me, that's when growth happens, you know, not just blowing things off because they don't fit inside my wheelhouse, but really taking an honest look at what's going on with the world today.
Thank you for taking the time to have an honest conversation with WEMU, Terrence.
Thank you, and it's great talking to you.